This is a Main Hustle Media podcast. Main Hustle Media podcasts are recorded on the ancestral lands of the Chumash, Tongva, Hohokam, and Yucateco Maya people, and we wish to pay our respects to the people of those nations, both past and present.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Queer and Far, the podcast for marginalized travelers seeking inspiration, guidance, and safety of community. In this show, we explore the wide range of topics, including living abroad and navigating challenges of traveling while Black, Brown, Queer, Disabled, or any intersection in between. Queer and Far focuses on intersections of identity and travel, creating a safe space for marginalized voices to be heard and celebrated. I am one of your co-hosts, Charmaine Fury, aka The Blazing Blurred, and I am joined by my co-host,
The partner. Newbie. Shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Hi, internets. What are we doing today?
It has been a fucking minute because this transition for me has been, I needed a lot of time to decompress.
I'm not in Kansas anymore.
I did not realize how much rest I fucking needed in moving here. And to be fair, I think technically it's okay to say, like, I'm not technically living here yet. I'm still in this hypersensitive mode because I have to go back in a couple of months to start my residency process. And so we came here on the tourist visa because we wanted to make sure we would even want to live here. And right. Pretty much before you even left, we're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna go here. But I, you know, we had all these plans. We were talking about do weekly like video journals of what the experiences would like and da da da. But I was so fucking exhausted when I got here. And not having to deal with the daily shit of living in America as a Brown. I didn't realize. So it got to a point where like I had all this hypervigilance and I didn't have anywhere to go. And I was just like, what do you do with all this fucking hypervigilance? And so I started floating in the pool every day and I started laying in the hammock every day. And spending so much time being quiet that I decided I couldn't really do anything.
I don't think you're being quite fair with yourself. Let's talk about it. Like, you've moved twice in 2 months. Think about that. Like, you move from one country to another with four humans, four cats, 12 bags. Okay. The first time. And then a month later, you're moving into a more long-term
housing. Long-term rental. Yeah. And that I did basically by me for the, over the course of a week, taking like suitcase at a time from the Airbnb to the new house and then emptying it and taking those suitcases back and then just kind of going back and forth.
Also getting the money handled, getting a lawyer handled, getting all that. Because and we will have an episode, guys, on renting, and how to get help. Like, that'll be a
thing for sure. But so the combination of like the hypervigilance thing and just trying to get settled, I really couldn't think about anything else, and so I just like I recorded a couple episodes that I didn't end up putting out because when I would go back to rewatch for the edit, I was like, ugh, I'm not ready. So now that I am 3 months in to staying here in Mérida, I'm at the halfway point of my tourist visa situation. I have been experiencing something that has sent me into what I'm describing as, and this is the incorrect word, crisis of faith, even though I'm an atheist, I really hate using it. But I think the sentiment behind it is what is happening to me. I'm experiencing something that is very confusing as a Brown person who is a multiple box check for how not to be American. You know, I'm a multiracial person. I'm a femme-bodied person. I am queer. you know, all that kind of stuff. And then on top of it, I'm going to sit here and try to be an American, even though I was born in that country. And I don't experience the privileges in America that I have recently discovered I experience here in Mexico. So the topic that we are going to discuss today, everybody, American privileges abroad.
Okay. I have a couple questions.
Okay. Hit me.
Was it something that happened something that happened that we're like, wow, that was a moment? Or was it, am I getting a feeling that this was like a
slow build?
It kind of creeped up. Okay.
Like little things were happening in the beginning where it was kind of noticeable, or I was wondering, was that an American privilege moment or was that not? Because when you don't really experience these privileges often, there were times in the beginning I couldn't tell if I'm being treated a certain way because I'm a tourist and they believe there might be extra things they can get from me as a tourist. Okay. Or am I just straight up going to be experiencing this regularly because I'm an American and they grant full citizen privileges to Americans here, I think. And I think what happened is the combination of the move to where I'm currently living, which is more of a suburb of Mérida. So I'm not in the main part of the city anymore. I'm in a suburb. I'm more removed. So I see fewer tourists and more locals. I am seeing tourists though, because in these suburb neighborhoods, there are usually a lot of expats. I'm seeing some, but I'm interacting with more locals than I am tourists now. Okay. And, you know, there's times where something will say cash only, and I don't realize, and I'm like, oh, I don't have cash. And they're like, oh, it's okay. Okay. And then they'll pull out something like a little credit card swiper thing from their phone, from their purse. And they'll be like, it's okay. We'll just do it. And I'm like, no, you know, I'll go, you know, cause I feel like I'm in doing something wrong in doing that, but they would rather have the sale than not. And so they're granting me a permission that I'm assuming they're probably not granting their countrymen. Right. You know?
Right. So let me get this straight.
Yes.
You left America.
Yes.
Because you're tired of American shit.
Yes.
Only to discover.
Yeah.
That the first thing that people are going to see you as abroad as American.
Yes. And that is fucking with me, which is why... This is why I think like the closest thing I can come up with it must be like is having a crisis of faith. Now, to be fair, I've been a lifelong atheist. I was born an atheist. I stayed an atheist. Even as being raised in the church, I never believed in any deities, any of the things.
Faith doesn't have to be a spiritual one. It could be something that you...
But like I've watched when Tree was going through losing...
His
belief. Like I saw him go through that in our early 20s and I saw how it broke him down, you know, because when you're losing faith, I think in a deity, I think it's a combination of still believing it exists and not believing it exists. And so you have kind of like an anger that it exists towards the thing that you no longer think exists, but you're kind of angry at it. Like you still do think it exists, you know? And that is what I'm having here. Like, I'm an American. I was born in America. I'm an American citizen. I've never experienced what white Americans of, you know, that have some privilege, whether rich or poor, there's a level of privilege white people in America experience that I don't experience.
Well, okay. Let's sit with that for a second.
Okay.
Because you just made the analogy about Tristan losing his faith in it. There was anger there. Is there anger, a little bit of anger here, with realizing that that's maybe the first thing that people will see?
So I'm uncomfortable.
Okay.
That's one thing. And I think you and I talked a little bit about this, like even before we got here, I'm like, if I get treated well because I'm an American, that's going to make me uncomfortable because I don't really know how to process that. Mm-hmm. And 3 months in, I still don't know how to process that. So when I'm granted some sort of Benny, you know, because I'm American, I'm just like, ew, you know, like it's immediate. It's this immediate thing of just
the
like,
first one is yes, that's a convenient. Thank you. I don't have to.
It's
go
convenient,
get that, right?
But it's,
at the same time, ew.
Yeah, and okay. so then that sends me down a thought process of like, oh, is this what it's like to be white? Like, where you just get shit? Does this happen, or is it because I'm a brown American? Like, I don't know, and I don't speak the language enough to talk about it, and also because race is not a concept that they enjoy talking about here, I won't be able to get into those conversations in a meaningful way.
Yeah,
I think a combination of until I learned better Spanish and also finding a person who's willing to talk about race, and to find those people, they usually have to have lived in the States at some point.
Right.
Because I have had conversation about race here with people, and they're like, cool. Mm-mm. You know, like, not important.
Now, were those people who were Americans, or those are locals?
Those were Mexicans, not necessarily from Mérida, but living here.
Okay.
But they were my Spanish teachers. I had two Spanish teachers, and I had this conversation with both of them. And the reason why it came up was because part of the lesson was to talk about what you did for a living. And I was saying that I was a podcast producer, and they go, okay, let me ask questions about your podcast in Spanish. And so going back and forth. So when I was like, you know, La Raza, and that's what I'm talking about, race and stuff. And they're like, why? And then, so then in English, I would have to jump over into being like, well, as an American, this is our whole every single day life. And I'm considered a mixed person, and I don't get to be all black or all Japanese or anything like that. And they're like, but it doesn't matter because you're American. And I was like, here, that doesn't matter. There it does.
It does.
I go, I'm treated poorly there because I'm brown, where here, I don't think that is going to happen to me. And they're like, yeah, no, it's interesting. And so one of the teachers viewed it as gossip. So he's like, tell me the chismosa. He scratches his nose. So it's like a gossip. What's your family dirt? Oh, you have a black and white grandparent and a Japanese and white grandparent.
And that's dirt.
It's like dirt. Yeah. So it's like gossip. And so he was like, oh, that's good gossip. Moving on. You know, so like he just, after he got the gossip, he was done with that conversation, end of conversation, moving on to something else. With the other teacher, she was saying, this is a real sensitive topic here. She's like, it's not that we don't think about it here. It's that it's uncomfortable for us to think about it here. So don't bring it up. Basically is saying, I assume what she's meaning is unless somebody else is starting the conversation, it's probably not a good idea as a foreigner to jump in and just be like lead with race.
Of course. But it, like the only, I guess I can identify with being uncomfortable talking about race. I'm a white American. That's partially a joke, but also it's true.
Yeah, sure.
You and I were talking about this earlier in the week, trying to come up with how to have this conversation.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you know, where I get it stuck, or what I have noticed from my observations of seeing people travel and have this conversation abroad, is it's a different way of talk. There is a different perception or different words being used. Mm-hmm, and certain words, even though we might be speaking English, have different meanings
in different places. Different people. Yeah, absolutely.
And in America, people are like, they're like, why do you guys make it everything about race? Well, because America makes everything about
America's race. America's built on race, so you can't avoid it.
Because we teach it as black, white, not human. Like the person was saying, you mean human race?
And they're like,
I'm assuming what that other person, no. Yes, that is technically correct.
Sure.
Right. But in America, we divide everything. And then conveniently, when we travel abroad, all of a sudden even the people who are like, no, black and white, blah blah blah, all of a sudden even abroad they go, oh no, we're all American, we all get along, we all
get along, right?
Because as soon as we get off the plane, we separate.
But I think the other thing that happens, and what is confusing to me about me being viewed as an American, because I understand that I'm an American, I'm born American, I've had 45 years there. Right. But that being said, I don't think that when I walk down the street, I wouldn't expect people to assume I was American. And when they do assume it, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Because I'm viewing that as a negative, right? I'm viewing that as the last thing I want people to view me as, is this thing that I have. Yes, by birth, I am an American, but by privilege, I am not. And so to get that treatment here is giving me, I think, a combination of like a guilt that I might be receiving some better treatment than maybe some local people might receive. And I definitely don't want that, but I also know it might be unavoidable.
Yeah.
And I have to work on coming to terms with what that means for me,
right.
Which is what is sending me into this little tailspin that, like, when I brought it up to you early in the week and I'm just like, ah, I'm freaking out, is that it, does it, okay, this is different than what I think you experienced, because one of the things that you were concerned about when you first had the idea of coming to move to Mexico, and this is years and years ago when we first talked about, like 4 or 5 years ago, you were like, my, you wanted to create like a living arrangement that allowed people to come for safety and stuff like that. But you're like, what I don't want to do is gentrify. What I don't want to do is colonize and stuff like that. But that being said, I need a safe space that's not in the States for people to go. And then you were like, but, you know, should I even allow myself that privilege of being able to travel and live abroad just because I can? And like, I get it. I get what you're saying, but I also feel like I would much rather you, who does work in anti-racism, who does work on, you know, different things like that, to be here versus like my British family who moved all around the world, right? Like, they still occupy this level of privilege. Just like, I'm a British person. You bow to me. And there's those are the people I was raised around, right? Like, those were
the entitlement.
The entitlement.
Because I paid for it, because I'm here, because right. I am who I am, I deserve it.
And you see it in the tourist areas, which is why I think it's been great not being around too much of the tourist areas, because you're just like, you'll see the post or you'll see it in person where it's just like, I've been waiting for 20 minutes. And it's like, bitch, you are on Medida time. And Medida time is not immediate. Yeah. Like yesterday, I had an appointment, in quotes, at 2 p.m. for the water guy to drop off the water. I wanted to leave the house, but I couldn't leave the house because I had to wait for the water guy to drop off the water, because I also had to pay him in cash. I couldn't pay with card. Arrival time was 3. That's Medida time.
I know, that's going to be hard for me too. I live on my calendar. I know.
And I'm like, I mean, I'm like a military kid. Like, I have a military family, and then I have Japanese relatives. And so the combination of punctuality that comes with those two and cultures, military culture and Japanese culture, it is stressful for me when things don't happen on time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been actively, like, I had a friend back in Houston who would actively every time I was stressed out about time, kept saying, time is white supremacy. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, but like, it would still stress me out. You know, like, I would sit there, I'm like, I hear you, but I don't know how to be any other way yet.
Right.
And so, but living here, I knew I was going to have to adjust to this. And so I'm still showing up early for things. It just doesn't mean that things are going to happen until they happen. Right. And so what's different there is I'm telling myself, I'm on time. It's okay. I'm on time. You know, but like, when I'm stuck at my house for an extra hour because I have errands to run before a certain amount of time, but I have to be here, you know, until they come.
Until, like, they come.
That was giving me a sense of stress. And I don't know how long I have to live here till that goes away, but that's like a low level.
So when it comes to, okay, so again, we're coming back. We left. I know. It's not like we were ever going to be like, I'm no longer American, even though I don't even want to even say expat. I mean, technically, I'm an immigrant. I will be immigrating, right?
Right now, I think it's fair for me to call myself an expat.
An expat,
because I have no paperwork.
Right.
And I don't know if this is forever or if it's just long term. I know it's going to be long term. I don't know that it's going to be forever.
Like, deleting your Americanness.
Yes.
Is just as fruitless as trying to delete your Japanese-ness or your blackness.
And
or
so
your
there's the crisis. It's like, I had to leave the country to become American.
I'm American. That, put that on a shirt. Can we just, okay. She had to leave America to become American.
Do you understand like how stressful that thought process has been for me?
As a white person, probably not. But as I remember when I was traveling abroad younger, much younger, realizing even as a child, I had way more power than adults.
Than adults of that culture, right?
Of that culture. I recognized that when I was younger, the level of that. So and it made me uncomfortable at 11 and 12. But the other thing that was also interesting to me was even in that culture where I was in Fiji, where I was sitting at a wedding that was an arranged wedding, and the bride was crying the entire time because she didn't have a choice in that. And that I got all this, I was young, I was 16. I was, but I was being treated as a guest of honor at someone else's wedding because of my Americanness.
Yikes.
But also the fact that I had more power as a woman.
Yeah. Than the
than she did
as a bride, yeah.
As a bride, so I think when traveling abroad or moving abroad, I think some of the things that would be important to consider is like we should always, and we did our homework too. But this is for our viewers, all three of you. Just kidding, it's bad.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. Is you know, what is the, like the historical, the political, the cultural relationship between the U.S. and the host country, you know, the country that you're going to, because you need to understand the relations that are currently happening now, and you need to should understand the history previously.
Right.
And
so like a good example of those conversations with my Spanish teachers who were telling me like why this is not important to talk about is I am the host of Militantly Mixed, which is a podcast about race and identity from the mixed race perspective. Right. If I am not living in a country where race is not discussed, then I am not maneuvering as it on a daily basis in the world that I'm currently occupying. I am not maneuvering as a mixed person. I'm maneuvering as an American.
Yes.
And since I don't know quite yet what that means for me and how that is, it's sending me into that quote crisis of faith thing where I'm just like, if I can't talk about race, how am I the mixed race podcaster? I'm the first long running mixed race podcaster.
Right.
Every mixed race podcast that existed before mine had shut down after 6 episodes, 10 episodes tops, and they hadn't run for at least a year until I started putting my show out. And now I'm about to hit my 5th anniversary. I get paid sometimes to go speak about mixed race identity because of my podcast. But now that I live here, I'm probably not going to get paid to do it as often because no one's going to also pay for my trip back to the States and things like that or whatever. So if I'm not walking down the street as a mixed person, I'm now walking down the street as an American, as a foreigner, as an expat, as a tourist, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, that's going to shake up my identity.
True.
Which is so, kind of what's happening is how do I keep doing this work?
I think one of the, I cannot give you any advice on the mixedness. But I think from the research that I've done, again, it's only research. But also I've traveled and I've been thinking about this stuff for a while is I think one of the things to get a strong handle on is what are the most common American stereotypes in the host country you're going to.
Mm.
Really get those, because what I think made me uncomfortable, I don't want to speak for you, but what made me uncomfortable is because you know how like when somebody like, well, it's, you know, stereotypes are like only bad when it's a negative stereotype. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, that's a compliment, you know, like, you know, all Asian people are smart. They're good at math. That's a compliment. That's a stereotype. Yeah. And that makes me uncomfortable.
And right? What if I'm an Asian dum-dum? Now you just, you know,
What if I have dyslexia and I'm bad at math?
And then I have like imposter syndrome.
Right. Because even when it's because number one, people like, I don't like stereotypes because that's usually when people hear that word, they think of it, you think negatively about me.
Yeah.
But there are also times.
There's also positive ones. Yeah.
There's going to be, oh, you're American. You have money.
Yeah.
You're American. You have this.
To be fair, like while my money does stretch further here, mm-hmm. I'm still broke about a week before payday because I'm trying to build a household here. And unfortunately, most of the shit I need is at your house. And until I can get that shit here, I got to go get the shit, you know?
Well, this will be an interesting, I think if, I don't know how you're going to navigate the mixed race, but I think you are now evolving mm-hmm. your show. Your perspective.
I have no choice.
You have to. And even if you were going to stay in the, you were going to have to do this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, getting a strong handle on this is an opportunity to find out what are the most common stereotypes that American Mexicans have about Americans. And then is that different when you go to Oaxaca? Is that different when you go to Cancun? Is that different? Right. Which I'm sure it is. It has to, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there certain idiosyncrasies that they think we all have in common?
Yeah.
Like in Fiji, they were so big on the handshake. And I'm like, why are they?
Because not part this? Of their culture, but yeah, they think it's but a part of American culture.
And I'm like, okay, we're going to just do this all day. Like, you know, and, but again, that was only in Suva, not in the island. So this will be.
Like, I don't know at what point I can really exhale all the way in terms of just accepting the fact that no matter what I'm going to be viewed, intellectually, I understand I'm an American and the view of me is as an American living here. And no more am I aware of that than when someone tries to speak to me and I have to apologize for my Spanish and ask to go slow or say something incorrectly, you know, like that. Then I really do feel like a dumb American who just decided to pack up and move to a country where I don't speak the language and act like everything's going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? That's when that becomes really evident to me.
It'll be an interesting conversation if you ever get to have these conversations with other Americans that are living down there. Mm-hmm. I would like to see, I am constantly aware. Things that I'm constantly aware of is that I am viewed as a woman. I'm constantly aware of that. I'm constantly aware of where to stand, what light, what this. But I'm also one of the things that I'm constantly aware of is my size. I'm a bigger person. There, again, lived the most of my life in America where there is size discrimination. And
I can't really tell if there is here.
That's what I want to find out. Is that,
Is that different? If I'm being honest, most people here are quite small, short. And it just like America, there's a range from small to large, mm-hmm. Bodies and stuff. But the mixture of relationships I see. You know, it's not always two littles and two bigs, you know, like sometimes it's a little and a big sometimes, you know, I will say chairs and stuff are small, but I think they're more height small than wide small.
Yeah.
So even for me, because I am taller here than the local population, there are times when my knees are higher than they should be. And I'll look over Tristan. I was like, is this what it's like for you? And it's even worse for him now because
he's tall. He's taller.
And
he's
one example is we were looking for bikes and we found one that he really liked, but the person was going through and he's like, oh, we don't have your size in this because this is literally a Mexico based company. So the tallest size bike is for what they view as the average tallest Mexican, right?
Which is what, 5'6"?
Maybe, but even for me, I'm 5'4" and I'm walking over at least eye line to a lot of people.
Okay.
And that's the first of my life. I fucking love it, first of all, because I have a full-on short man's complex. And so it's nice to finally be a tall person. But chairs sometimes are a little bit shorter. But basketball hoop over here is a lot taller. confusing. Well, not that I'm planning on it, but it's just something that Tristan noticed.
I'm just wondering if we start having these conversations with other, even though my knee-jerk reaction is to stay the hell away from other Americans, is other reasons, is that what, you know, will it be if somebody is trans or if someone is, you know, queer, is that something that is also something that is, I don't think it gets negated or disappears, but it like seems to move down.
Like where importance. On the hierarchy will some of these issues be?
Because it's not like you said, it's never that you said, I'm gotten rid of my Americanness. I never thought that was going to be, it's just all of a sudden that trumped everything else. And I got so used to being seen as the mixed American. And now you're American. And what are you talking about this stuff for?
Yeah. And it's like, wait, you just literally took a big chunk of my identity out, you know, like out of play right now. So I have to think about myself more robustly.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is I'm super self-aware of a person. I'm very intersectional. Yeah. It's also why I also introduce myself through so many of my intersections, because I'm just like, you know, I'm not just a mixed person. I'm a complete package. I'm a nerd. I'm a this, I'm a that, whatever. I'm a queer person. And it will be interesting as I integrate more, like, where is queerness in relation to racial issues here? Where is, you know, like you're saying, all these different things, I want to know where that is. And since I'm the visitor here, the last thing I want to do is just walk up to someone on the street and be just like,
well,
you know, big conversation about race attack, you know, like I, you know, I need to be in environments where some of this stuff, it'll be obvious. It's a little okay for me to broach it here versus not. And so what I started to notice, and I, you know, I had to take heed of my Spanish teachers is, when, like, do you remember that time when we were on the street and the girl walked up and handed me a piece of paper and
to vote,
she saw me with you guys. And so she started speaking to me and I was like, you know, no hablo inglés. And she looked at me like this and I was like, yo soy, American, you know, Americana. And then she was like, still looking at me. And I was like, soy negra y japonesa. And she goes, and then she just took it away. And then she was like, oh, you know, she kind of did like a, okay, kind of a thing as she walked away. And I think like that whole process was so unnecessary for her, from her perspective. Mm-hmm. I think the only question she had is, why do I look like I look, but I don't speak Spanish? Right.
Right.
But me saying American, and this is a case where race becomes helpful in this instance, or ethnicity at least, is that it wasn't sufficient for me to tell her I was American, because she's probably thinking Mexican American. But also there's the issue of no sabo kids, the kids that don't have the language at home. And so that I could have been that. But when I said soy de negra y japonesa,
that was just,
it was like, whoa.
I was standing behind you and she was like,
you saw it was such a huge reaction.
It was like she stepped backwards.
Yeah, because and I think in that moment, as unaware as I was at it, in that moment, I brought something that just made her uncomfortable out into the world for no reason. And so that's why at first she reacted big, and then after that she's like, she shrugged it off and like probably dismissing it as like, oh, that's an American,
right.
But that big reaction has really stuck with me, because after that was when I took the classes and the, and, you know,
and that's when they informed you that
explaining it. And I was like, oh, so every time I tell somebody, yo soy Americana, yo soy negra y japonesa, I'm giving them the information they need and making them uncomfortable at the
same time.
What they need to know is what country I was born in, or, you know, essentially, and not anything else. And so now that's hamstringed me because of how I maneuver the world. So now I have to learn how to adapt to the place that I'm in, and rather than enforce the thing that I'm identifying with that makes them uncomfortable, learn how to alter the way I express why I don't speak Spanish yet versus, you know, whatever. And so maybe the way I learned to say it now is I didn't have Spanish in the household or something like that. Or just saying I'm practicing. For no sabo kids, coming to Spanish-speaking countries, it's easier for them to say I'm practicing my Spanish versus saying okay. I don't speak Spanish. And that's, I've picked that up on TikTok on multiple people that I follow. They say that if you say you don't speak Spanish, they immediately think it's your fault you don't speak Spanish.
Speak Spanish, yeah.
And not understand that there's a nuance or context as to why their family chose not to teach you Spanish.
Okay, all right. But I could also... I could also see it from another point of view of like, why did you come here if you didn't want to learn Spanish?
Right. And so
as opposed to saying I'm learning, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So if a Latin kid comes out here or an adult and says, I'm practicing my Spanish, then they'll be forgiving in a way of like, oh, this poor American kid didn't learn Spanish. Well, I'm going to go ahead and communicate with them better. For no sabo kids, for someone like us, you know, just straight up foreigners who have no other tie to this country, I think we're still in danger of being that American, you know.
Of course.
The difference is I'm actively trying to learn Spanish, where a lot of the people who look like you aren't. They're just here. And then
that's fair.
They're literally having meltdowns on the internets about like, it doesn't make any sense why a place that has so many American tourists wouldn't speak, like why everybody doesn't speak English. Bitch, we don't have to cater to you. You chose to come here.
Right.
You can learn your little 10 guide question statements that you can say to people and just maneuver that way. You shouldn't anticipate, that everybody speaks English. And even when I interact with someone who does speak English or speaks a little bit of English, I'm still responding. If I know the Spanish for what we're talking about, I'm still trying to respond that way. One thing I have noticed is that saying sí has become so natural now that even when I was talking to the English speaking folks at the Juneteenth celebration, the other Black expats last week, I was saying sí when they would say something. So like that's now become it's programmed in there. So
I think you know, to circle back, dear internets who are viewing us, we're not saying it can be a hard conversation. I'm not having a hard time because I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm trying to find words to have a change of perspective because when we talk about stuff from an American point of view, when it comes to race, we are not saying that colorism doesn't exist, right? White supremacy, there's no place on this globe that white supremacy has not touched. Okay, period. And just because you're not white doesn't mean that you cannot uphold white supremacy talking points or tactics or whatever.
Yeah.
So colorism is a form of that.
Yeah. And that is definitely present.
And that is definitely present. I mean, I think in everywhere I've gone, I have noticed that colorism is a thing. But having that conversation, the way that we talk about it from an American point of view is what we're getting at. It's not how we are going to have this conversation with locals,
a local person, right? So the closest to like a more understand, that's even a harsh word there too, because that's from my perspective needing the understanding, the version of that conversation I have had is when we went to Chichen Itza and we had our tour guide that day was Jorge. And I was explaining to him when we were walking side by side, you know, that I do this podcast about mixed race identity and and I'm a mixed person. I said that I was Black and Japanese, and he said oh, okay. And he said, that's interesting that you found something to do on your show, you know. And it was just kind of like a good for you type of thing. Now, his identity was Maya, and he made it very clear to us, I'm Maya, not Mexican.
Not Mexican.
You know? And yes, he said, you know, because I'm Maya, I have to speak Spanish, Maya, and English, because he works in the tourist industry.
Yep.
And the way he phrased that to me, like, hit me right here, because it was just like, he said, because I'm Maya, I have to speak Spanish and English.
Yeah.
And that is not even something that other Mexicans here have the same issue. Like, they don't have to speak English here. But because he's Maya, there's so many limited jobs he can have that he has to work in tourism. So he has to know Spanish and English.
Yes.
So he's a trilingual person, and it was kind of
for survival. Right?
And so because of that, so what I don't know is, did he have that conversation with me about race in a way that was more comfortable to me than I've been able to have so far, because the industry he works in and the fact that he's had to adjust for it, or because he's a Maya person and knows what it is like to be a second class citizen in the place that he was born.
Right. And, you know, with the people where their people were here before.
Yeah. Spanish. Like my people were here first, but okay. Yeah. I guess but I have to bring to you, you know, so was that why that conversation was more comfortable, and why I didn't know yet.
Yeah.
Not to talk about that in other places. Or was because he works in the tourist industry, was he just nodding along, but he was actually being very uncomfortable?
Maybe.
Either of those things could be possible. Right?
Yeah, because he had a conversation with me about sexuality and gender, about how those terms, you know, there only being two options is a very, that's your thing. Not us.
Yeah, it's not our thing. It's your thing. That's
we didn't have that. We were everything.
I actually wish I had kept in touch with it. Like, I wish I had found a way to keep in touch, because like, I had such an enjoyable time talking to him. Yeah. He was such a helpful and informative, and like really let us ask questions that might be considered out of pocket. Like,
maybe,
I don't know if they were, but he was really gracious in having both those conversations, because we understand that we live in a place that, like, especially Yucatan in particular, as Mexico is concerned, is the furthest behind in accepting, in particular of trans folks, but LGBT things, like they're still getting there, right? Yeah. The country is getting there.
Other states are farther along.
Yucatan is Yucatan. Learning. And so there's a bigger influx of trans activism that's happening here in Yucatan compared to other places, because this is the next place it needs support.
And I love it, because in some ways they're going back to their roots. Because
hopefully, yeah. But that's...
Wait.
Yucatan is considered the lowest hierarchical place here. And that's because they're still the heavy Maya influence. That's other parts of Mexico make fun of the Yucatan accent and things like that, whatever. So if people from Yucatan are returning to their roots, they have to be comfortable acknowledging their indigenous heritage. And some of them is either just straight out not aware of it, or straight out do not want to know, or will deny it. That seems to be a big aspect of what I'm picking up in some of the things I'm seeing online. I haven't been able to interact in the world with that yet, but you know what I'm seeing online, because my phone is so confused of where I'm at. It'll start an article in English and then halfway through just switch it over to Spanish. And then I got to copy and paste it and put it into the translator so I can go back to reading it in English, because it won't let me. But, you know, people are talking about it. People are writing about it here. And there's been pride events all over the place and stuff like that. I've just happened to miss them. There's actually an anti-pride event tonight, but it's from queer people.
Oh,
I should have thought about what I said. It's put on by queer people, but it's like anti the commercialization of pride.
Okay.
Event. But I looked at like kind of the what's going on. It's not really my cup of tea. I don't want to be around like in a small venue with a lot of people and loud music. That's not for me anymore.
I will put up with it if there's food.
There's just certain ways in which it needs to be more open air now for me, you know, because of the COVIDs. So if it's like I could never go back to my life the way I was in Austin, where I was going to all those, you know, fewer than 70 occupation clubs to watch De La Soul or Tyler Quali or something like that. I can never do that again. I just can't. Now, if it's open air and it's still small, but it's open air, that might be a little bit different. But yeah, it just seems like a tiny black box type theater site room or something like that. And it's going to be packed. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not for me. Plus I can't go outside that late at night anymore unless I can only, unless I know I'm only going to do it once for a long period of time. Yeah, not for me anymore. But yeah, so there's more things happening here. Just in the last week and a half, I've joined a Black LGBT group and a WhatsApp channel and stuff like that. And they do things together. I just have to meet some of them before I start going to people's individual houses to hang out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I now have people that I can talk to about some of this stuff about, you know, being a Black or Brown American here. I'm starting to meet them, but it'll take a little while till that surfaces onto the show. But yeah, it really has sent me into a little bit of a spiral, because as I have decompressed a lot from like the hypervigilance aspect of being a Brown person in America, you know, like just the other night when it was dark, I walked all the way down to an OXXO, yeah, like, you know, a mile and a half away and back. And, you know, there were moments that were kind of nerve wracking. Like people just would pull over to the side of the road and then look at you and you're just like, are you looking at me? Like, I don't know what's like, I don't know why this is happening. You know, there's little things like that. But, you know, this being such a, you know, normally very safe place and stuff, like, you know, people say buenas noches as you're walking down the street and da, da, da. You know, it wasn't that hard of a thing to do, where there is a point in the day that I would have to think, depending on what city I was in, I would have to think about, is it worth it going outside right now? You know, in Houston, I probably wouldn't have gone for a walk at that time of night. In New York, I would have, you know.
It's New York. Yeah.
So things like that. That I've been able to get to, but this idea of me no longer, like, I am who I am. I'm not in a crisis of identity. I am mixed main no matter what. It's too much a part of my personality. It's too much a part of what I do in terms of this, you know, profession that I've created for myself, for me to fully separate from it. But I know that I'm going to need to evolve, because what I don't want to get bogged down with is I didn't leave the country to still be dealing with the problems of the country that I come from. And so I do want to find out a different way to be mixed Maine where I'm at without voluntarily signing up for the pressures of being a mixed person in
American.
You know, like, I don't want those to be the only conversations that I have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Going forward, a big part of why I came here was so that I wouldn't have to do stuff like that. I just didn't realize it was gonna send me into this, like, is everything I do futile now?
No, not futile, just different. And it's just, it's not that, it's just that you are now going to, you will adapt on how to have these conversations, right?
Yeah.
Because we have just been, okay, I'll just say we have been educating ourselves for the last, I don't know how many years, on how to have conversations with other Americans to hopefully improve America.
Mm-hmm.
Now
that feels futile. So get the fuck out. I know you're going through something right now, America, but I gotta go. Peace.
I gotta go. this relationship is not working out. But now we have to learn how to have that conversation again.
Yeah.
Because racism, colorism, isms exist everywhere.
Yeah. And that's the other part, is that, like, I could be so unaware of what are the important isms here because I'm a foreigner. Right.
Right.
And until I get a chance to interact with people, because, like, I notice even in, like, the Black social group that I'm in, I'll see people post, like, is this because I'm Black or is this because I'm an American? And then we'll proceed to explain something that happened to them, an interaction that they had out in a store or something like that or whatever. And then, you know, a lot of people will be like, that's never happened to me. I don't know how to clock that. And some people will be like, I really think that's more of an American thing. I don't really think they give a shit about us being Black out here. You know, the way in which they do is that there are times when someone will, that's how they call your attention. So, like,
oh, God.
you know, what? If they're in like a marketplace or whatever, and they're trying to sell, the people are trying to sell stuff, they might be like, you know, Afro, you know, like negra and stuff. And it's just like, I haven't seen it here, but I've seen it on TikTok. I've seen other travelers and stuff. Oh, funny thing. There's a TikToker I already followed and did not realize, but they were at the same event that I was at the other day. We're in the same social group, but we don't know each other. But they were filming stuff that ended up on TikTok. And I was like, hey, I know. I've seen that. Oh, we're in the same group. Oh. I was already following them. They were one of the ones I already followed. But yeah, so there's things like that that still happens where it's hard to say, like, what is that? Mm-hmm. Because it's not really structural racism that's happening, but is there a prejudice there? Do they think that that's just cool? Because that happens all over the world. All over the world.
Again, so circling back to what are the common stereotypes that the host country that you're at have about Americans?
Yeah.
That's the number one.
And then if I'm going to try to convince a local person that I'm a Black person, mm-hmm. what? Mm-hmm. You know, like that, you know, like, I mean, even at the Juneteenth event, until I took my mask off, one of the girls I was talking to, she's like, she actually like record scratched me for a second, because she was like, when you were getting out of the Uber at first, I was like, is that a white woman? No, you know, because she just saw the back of my head and she saw my, you know, like shoulders and stuff. And I was getting out of the Uber. I was like grabbing something and pulling myself back out. And she goes, then you turned around and she's like, well, they're not white, but what are they? And then since I looked lost also, she's like, are you trying to go to this Black thing at the park? And I was like, yeah, but I think they dropped us off in the wrong place. She's like, I just got dropped off in the wrong place too. So then we started working together to try to find where we were supposed to go. And when she heard my voice, so she said to me like throughout the night as we hung out more and stuff, she's like, yeah, so when I first saw you, I wouldn't have known anything until you took off your mask. As soon as you took off your mask, I was like, oh, she Black. She's like, but it was really how you talked that made me think you were Black. And then I took my mask off and I confirmed it for her. So that's something that I'm used to in Black spaces. If they can't see my whole face, they might not know that I'm Black. But then they'll hear me talk and then they're like, wait a second, there's something going on there. Mm-hmm. And then the conversations happen. So the very first conversation I had about race and like Blackness was with Black people in Mexico,
right?
You know, where I could keep talking,
right?
And so like then these were very familiar conversations. It was like, yeah, I mean, they just at that point, the people I was talking to was like, yeah, you're Black, like it's cute, you're Japanese and stuff too, but like you're Black, you're one of us, you're here. Yeah. And then someone was like, your name's Charmaine. I was like, I know, you know, like I'm not saying I'm not Black enough. I'm saying I have to enter places carefully because I need to make sure that the group I'm entering is also on the same page in terms of like what it means to be a mixed Black person, which means that's changing. The younger generation is not accepting of mixed Black people in the way that my generation and older were, for different, totally different reasons and stuff like that. I was entering, you know, gently, because I wanted to make sure that I didn't take up too much space with all my mixedness and stuff like that. So I had a couple conversations and they were, it was kind of like sort of weird. It was like a recharge because it was like this thing I haven't been able to talk about in 3 months. I finally got a chance to talk about.
And it felt good.
Felt good, but at the same time, I do think I will need to evolve past this because in whatever form that ends up taking, because if my spidey senses for being a brown in America don't have to be tingling all the time,
you need to know what tingles.
I need to know the other tingles. I need to understand
what it is like when somebody is going to assume things that if you're American or not.
And it's probably going to be money based.
There's going to be a money based privilege. There's going to be a size based privilege. There's going to be a queer privilege. There's going to be a straight privilege. There are all of that in there. We just don't know how to ask those questions.
Yeah. Or we don't even know the signs for what's happening when it's happening to us, you know?
Right.
So that's what's been on my mind lately is what I've been trying to figure out, like, how do we even talk about, like, what's the thing I got to do? you know, to, you know, because I'm the one who needs to assimilate here, not them. They don't need to accommodate
Absolutely.
Me. I need to assimilate to them. And assimilation is a touchy thing for a brown person like me who has foreign family within the country I was born in, you know, so I have to be careful about not entirely losing my home culture while, whilst also taking on a new form of culture and a new way to be me in a place, you know? But damn, is it noticeable? Like, it is so noticeable being American here. And I did not realize how often people are ready to accommodate me. I did not realize it was going to be that frequent. I accepted before we got here that that was going to happen on occasion. And I, really
I know, because I had talked to you about it. I had warned you about it. And you're like, yeah, I know. But I don't think you...
Well, like I knew it was going to happen because I've traveled abroad before. I know that it happens, but I didn't expect, I expected it to happen more frequently in tourist scenarios. I didn't realize it was also going to happen in day-to-day life. I'm not even near the tourist section of town spaces. You know, people will ask you, like, would you prefer me speaking English? And you're just like, for me, I'm like, I prefer an English menu, but you can still speak Spanish to me, you know, because I'm trying to learn, you know, like I want to hear Spanish more often, but things like that. So, or they'll go find somebody, you know, hold on, we got an English speaker, and they'll go get a person, you know, to speak English to me and stuff like that. And it's just like, ugh. I mean, I know that that happens in the States too. If you have someone that speaks a language, you're going to go get them. I get it. But, you know, I was fully fine to be like, here's the Google Translate, you know, like back and forth. Like, I'm fine to keep that up. But that's a different level of labor on the
on their part,
you know, too.
There you go.
So, yeah, you know, it's a whole bunch of stuff like that. I'm not used to having this much privilege, and it's itchy for me to adapt to. I don't know how people adapt to it so quickly because it is just really uncomfortable to me.
I don't know if people adapt to it quickly as much as they avoid it.
No, I think people just straight up adapt to it. I think a lot of people are just like, oh, I can just
be treated. I'm so sorry. Like this. I'm just so used to I'm just used to this.
Yeah, and white, that's what I'm saying. Like, white people would be just like, I mean, yeah, the entitlement, but I think white people are also like, this is how it happens in the world.
This is and what I mean by that is, in the reason why I'll even group it now. Okay. A lot of times when traveling abroad for me, Americans will travel abroad, but they'll still go to American groups.
Sure.
They'll live in American areas.
Yeah.
They'll bring their Americanness and demand that they'll have a little spot of America, like in their little HOA.
Yeah.
Whatever. That to me is avoidance. That to me, it is avoidance.
Because why did you come here? Just for the
Why did you come here? You know? They came there for the money benefit. They came here for all the other benefits, but they won't invest and divest, more importantly. They won't divest in their Americanness. And they won't invest in their host country. And to me, that is avoidance. Yeah. So there's a couple of things that maybe could, I don't know, maybe it'll help you. It helped me. There's a lot more stuff out there. And there's so many great bloggers of color who also speak about this. And I put a couple of there. But one of the articles that I keep going back to, because it had a couple of... was actually out of Millbury.edu, but they have a couple of like reading materials and resources that you could do. Like, one of them is Understanding Your Power, 7 Ways to Make Your Semesters Over for Students. That's I think that's great. They also have an American Abroad, Diversity Abroad, different articles on that. And then they also, Where Are You From? Understanding Microaggressions Abroad.
Oh, that's the other thing. I mean, I don't want to continue the thing, but the "where are you from" means so much
less different here in America, like, than it does.
To be a person who, like, literally every single day of my 45 years in America, I get asked, "What are you? Where are you from?" Or, "No, where are you really from?" where literally not a day goes by. If I choose to go outside today, I'm going to be asked, where are you from? No, where are you really from? And what are you? And here you do get asked, where are you from? But they literally mean what country. And if they have any further follow-up questions, which rarely ever do, it's what city. The next thing is what city. So they'll say, where are you from? I'll say America or United States. And then they'll say Houston.
Yeah,
because there's a direct flight from here to Houston. So a lot of people know Houston. Or they'll say Los Angeles. And I'm like, that's funny because I'm kind of from both. So I can just say yes to whichever in Spanish and to keep, you know, to keep things moving along. But to be a person who is so on guard from that question and just being like, I hate when I hear it, to it not meaning what it means to me here. And it's just like, and then to be thanked afterwards with like, thank you for letting me talk to you today. Thank you for letting me talk to an American today. Thank you for giving me the experience of talking to a foreigner today. This was interesting for me. These are like, what the fuck is happening here? You know, like, it's just so, I mean, it's wonderful that I am in a place where this is finally a possibility for me, but like to turn off the spidey tingle, you know, to hear that question and not.
I think you're just going to, don't turn off the spidey tingle. You're going to, it's not turning off the spidey tingle. It's adapting the spidey tingle because you still need your spidey tingles.
Because the thing about the spidey tingle is that it goes away when it acknowledges this is not a threat. And so you immediately get it and then it goes away. Like that is the whole thing about it, which is why having someone like Miles exists to teach people just like why he's always tingling and why white people aren't is because he doesn't, it takes him a little bit longer to identify if this is a threat or not. And because that's really much the story of being a black person, a Latino person, an Asian person in America. And so that's where I'm at right now. It's just like, I hear the question and I'm just like, Estados Unidos, they fucking believe me when I tell them I'm from the United States. And that is the thing that shocked me more than anything is like, you're from the United States? End of questions. You know, like there's no more follow-up questions. In America, even though I'm born in America, even though I have a blue passport, where are you from? No, where are you really from?
Really from.
Where are your parents born? Where are your grandparents born? How far back do I have to go to prove that I'm American? How about my great, 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 whatever the fuck came over in 1711 from Ireland? How about that? Is that still not, I'm not American? Okay. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's so weird. It is so weird to hear that question and it not mean.
Well, it not mean what, well, oh, well, hopefully that book will help you. But I linked them all here so that you can maybe add them to the.
We'll put them in the show notes for everybody. Yeah.
I have faith in you. I have faith in you more than most. I can appreciate your uncomfortableness in general. I think the only thing that is sometimes we were having this conversation privately is like, I can only understand things based on listening to you or more on an academic level. I can understand it from a reading.
Like but usually I have to tell you a story to tell you a story.
It's not my experience.
Yeah.
Right.
I have to be like, first, let me tell you this. So you understand what happened to me today.
Right. Right. Right.
Like, that's usually the conversation that you and I have.
So, I mean, but I have traveled, I have experienced the American privilege stuff and just being shocked by it.
Like, I would love to know where Americans or even like British could travel. And when I say this, I mean, white Americans and white British, where they wouldn't see the privilege. You know, like where they would automatically be like, you wait, you know, you go ahead and wait. I would love to see where that is and see how I exist in those spaces.
If anybody who's listening to this knows any of that, can you please like jot down a comment so we can look up? Because it may exist, but the way I've been understanding and from my research, the way many of us have been behaving poorly abroad, we are getting pushed off into certain areas because they don't want to deal with us.
Yeah. And that is where the brown privilege might come into play as an American. It's like, oh, wait, you're one of the ones that don't get treated right there. Okay. Welcome. You know, like that's what I'm wondering if I'm going to experience as we start to travel, you know, more. than just
I want, and then they're gonna look at me and they go colonizer, and I'm like,
yes. And then I'll be like, this is my servant. No, I'm joking. Let's see what happens.
This is my what come. Was that? Come carry the bag. Oh God. But yeah. You know, like
we have fun.
You know, because like you know, so. I appreciate your journey. I love the fact also you should probably share some of your like massage things. Like I just want you to know, guys, just to make me feel better being stuck where I'm at. She's been sending me videos of floating in the pool and getting a foot massage. And
I can't help if those are lying in the hammock. Or and just like, see what you're missing, get your ass over here. Or if they're really God, just I rude. I don't know.
A little bit of both, but I think you like it. So
if they're just rude, then I apologize. But part of it is just being like, if you lived here, you would be getting your foot massaged right now. You know, if you lived here, you would be butt naked in the hammock right now.
My God, if I had any, you know, I would be like,
there. I know.
I can't wait. I'm going back in September, my friends. So I'll be making some more stuff that way. But I think we are past our limit. Yep. So do we want to say that you're waxed and vaxxed? And
I mean,
properly unpacked.
We want to say I ain't been waxed since I left the States. We want to say that I don't know when these vaccinations expire, but hopefully we're all good. And
are you unpacked?
We're unpacked. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But we still are lacking so many things we need that even today, Tree was like, I didn't think about the fact that we left all our packed stuff at Shay's house and we need that shit. And since we're not going to get it anytime soon, we got to go buy it. And now we're going to have two of those things. And I was like, what did you think? How often did you think they were going to be muling shit over from the States?
Believe me, I would love to. So if you just tell me what to go gather, we'll do a call. Okay. So we'll do a call, but we don't have to talk about it.
We don't have to do that here.
So, internets, I love you. Take care of yourself. Happy Pride. And
yeah, it is Pride Month.
Be safe out there. And if you're still living in America, I know things are get scary out. Right now. Some of us can't get out, but hang tight, stay strong. You're not alone.
At least start planning your exit strategy.
That is correct.
It's getting wild out there.
It's getting wild out there. But I love you guys.
Queer and Far is a Main Hustle Media podcast produced and edited by Charmaine Fury. Co-hosted by Charmaine Fury, a.k.a. The Blazing Blurred, and Shay Nanigans. Music is Big Band Savage Jazz by Pine Groove. If you like what you've heard on Queer and Far, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.